Otto, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Eugene Connors is excused. Councilmember Joan Hansen?
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Dowdy?
Present.
Mayor Ronald Ertley?
Here.
Councilmember Douglas Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Serena Sullivan?
Here.
City staff, Justin Johnson, city manager, Ashley Coronado, city clerk, Albert Echave, police chief, Britt Hansen, city attorney.
Thank you very much. Item number one, discussion, presentation, and possible recommendation by the Homeless Task Force. This work session was called for by Council Member Hansen, so at this point in time, I will defer to you.
Thank you, Mayor. I am very pleased to have been part of this task force in the beginning in getting it set up, but I have to say that Linda Weiland, thank you, I'm so glad I got it right, and Donna Pulling did the majority of the work, and there's been a tremendous amount of work done in the past 4 months. And so this is the opportunity to have a presentation of what the task force has been able to accomplish and also what type of recommendations that they have, and to get input from the council and also to get input from the public. So I am going to hand it over to Linda Weiland. I knew I couldn't do it twice in a row, for the presentation.
Thank you. I'm Linda Weiland. I'm a Bisbee resident, and I am also a co-chair of the Bisbee Homeless Task Force. Good evening, Mayor Ertley and City Council members. Thank you for scheduling this work session and for the opportunity to have a discussion about homelessness in Bisbee and the work of the Bisbee Homeless Task Force. The Bisbee Homeless Task Force is a community-led group established in response to the officer-involved shooting behind the Safeway this spring. I think the entire community was traumatized by that incident in many ways. In May, I presented a petition to the City Council requesting that the city establish a committee to study the issue of homelessness in Bisbee. The City Council declined due to staffing constraints and suggested that the community organize the committee, and with that, the Bisbee Homeless Task Force was begun. Chuck Alton is doing our visuals, and I appreciate his work, and we'll see if we can get him going. The task force was specifically requested to help create police procedures regarding interactions with the homeless and people experiencing mental illness, and to provide recommendations to the City Council regarding homelessness.
Linda, why don't you stop just a minute and let's see if we can get the slides going.
Okay, thank you.
Can you start from the top?
The Bisbee Homeless Task Force is a community-led group established in response to the officer-involved shooting behind the Safeway this spring. I think the entire community was traumatized by that incident in many ways. In May, I presented a petition to the City Council requesting that the city establish a committee to study the issue of homelessness in Bisbee. The City Council declined due to staffing constraints and suggested that the community organize the committee, and with that, the Bisbee Homeless Task Force was begun. The task force was requested specifically to help create a police procedure regarding interactions with the homeless and with people experiencing mental illness, and also to provide recommendations to the City Council regarding homelessness. Tonight, we will discuss the task force's findings about homelessness in Bisbee. In June, Joan Hansen, Donna Pulling, and I met with Police Chief Albert Echave and identified some key issues to focus on initially. One, a brochure listing services available in Bisbee to be handed out by police officers and two, to improve the use of the NurseWise mobile crisis team by Bisbee's first responders. In early July, we held the first Bisbee Homeless Task Force meeting and have met regularly twice a month since then. Over 60 individuals have attended our meetings, including community members, people from a variety of agencies, people who are homeless, formerly homeless, and their family members, homeless advocates, members of the religious community, local business people, representatives from Simpatico Integrated Care, and many others. We would like to thank all of the people and agencies that have participated in the task force and the City of Bisbee for your support. While focusing on homelessness in Bisbee, we found that it is essential to partner with agencies in Sierra Vista and Douglas that provide services that are not available in Bisbee. The Homeless Task Force used a process based on the U.S. Department of Justice community-oriented policing guides. We brainstormed to identify issues related to homelessness in Bisbee, categorized the issues, and then established 6 work groups to address those categories: housing, mental health, first responders, justice system courts, and also the brochure and one-stop shop work groups. The work groups identified the strengths, weaknesses, and gaps in the various systems and also identified possible solutions, specific goals, and funding opportunities. We were encouraged by the work group's ability to take the ball and run with it as each group worked on their subject area and reported back to the Homeless Task Force with proposed solutions. We found that homelessness is a very complex and multidimensional problem. We found there are a lot of dedicated local people and agencies that really care, and a lot of good services available. But there is also a lack of awareness of the services and a lack of coordination. Next Tuesday, we will present our recommendations to the City Council for your approval. We have worked very hard to find funding sources and to limit our recommendations to those that will require little or no staff time or cost to the city. We appreciate the opportunity for the Homeless Task Force to have this discussion with you and to receive your comments and feedback. We have several Homeless Task Force members and agencies here to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions or comments from the council? Councilmember Sullivan.
I was wondering what services are not available in Bisbee and if there's any goals proposed towards actually getting those services here rather than just coordinating with Sierra Vista and Douglas.
Well, what we found is that some of the services that are lacking in Bisbee would be some of the things that are provided by the Wellness Connection. The Wellness Connection is located in Sierra Vista and in Douglas. And what they do is they provide services such as helping people with mental illness to develop job skills, to develop living skills. They provide day activities for the seriously mentally ill and a whole range of services. They even they provide job training, lots of activities. That's one of the main things that we found was lacking, and actually we'll get into that further. And one thing that we found is that In some cases, there are services that are needed specifically here in Bisbee, but in other cases, it might be more cost-effective to actually send our people in need of those services to the existing agency. So I'll try to address that a little bit further on in the presentation.
Okay.
The lights again.
Which one is it?
Thanks. And I appreciate your questions as we go along. I'll try to do a good job of answering them. Okay, here on the screen are several of the agencies that have participated in the Bisbee Homeless Task Force. In your packet that we sent out, there's a copy of the slides if you want to take notes on them, and some supplemental information, a list of resources that are available on the internet if you wanted to delve into the subject further. One of the first things that the task force did was we identified our mission, and that is seeking out solutions to prevent and end homelessness in Bisbee. And we also identified our actual definition, our working definition of homelessness, which is anyone who is, was, or is at risk of becoming homeless. Our process was based on the Department of Justice community-oriented policing guides. We also researched what other cities had done on the internet. And we used a decision-making model, the SARA decision-making model. The steps are scanning to identify the problems, analysis to further refine the specifics of the problems where in our particular area, and to develop possible solutions. Response is where you refine those, whittle down those possible solutions, and actually take action. And then assessment is when you determine whether your action was successful based on statistics, benchmarks, and so forth. And then you repeat the process with the next round, scanning, analysis, response, and assessment. And there's a page describing the SARA model in your packet. Okay. We did a lot of brainstorming. What services are available in Bisbee, what services are needed, what's going well, and where are the gaps. We identified strengths and weaknesses of the different systems, and what we found is that there's a lot of services available. For example, the Bisbee Coalition for Homeless, the Tin Town Shelter, does a really good job, and there's statistics in your packet that describe the use over the last 3 years of the number of people served. There are a lot of great local service providers, but we also found that gaps existed. So we categorized those gaps into six categories and established work groups that were formed to focus on the various categories and projects. In less than 6 months, we've completed the Bisbee's Guide to Services, and you have a copy there in front of you, and I think everybody in the audience has a copy of the Bisbee's Guide to Services. We've put together a draft police procedure for interactions with the people experiencing mental illness or in crisis. Mental health first aid training, which is a one-day class for first responders, has been scheduled. We've started putting together a one-stop shop, which is for information and services. And most importantly, we've developed a network to bring people together to talk about the issues of homelessness and to work together to find solutions. What we found is that the major causes for homelessness are lack of employment and lack of affordable housing. These are complicated by issues such as mental illness, substance abuse, domestic violence, disability, loss of a job, loss of a spouse, injury or a health crisis, dementia, or even just plain bad luck. And we found that homelessness is something that could actually happen to any of us. How many homeless people do we have in Bisbee? Well, we found that it's actually counting the number of people who are homeless is sometimes a difficult job. The government uses a point-in-time count. And basically, what that is every year, every other year, at a certain on a certain night in January, throughout the country, volunteers go out, seek out people who are homeless on that particular night and interview them, and the statistics are put together, and that's the point-in-time count. The people are categorized either as sheltered, which means they're staying in a shelter, or unsheltered, which means they're either living out in the open or staying in a building that's not fit for human habitation or something on that order. And what we found is that in the 2015 point-in-time count, countywide, there were 316 sheltered homeless people. In Bisbee, there were 31 sheltered homeless people. So that's about, Bisbee had about 10% of the county's sheltered homeless people. Unsheltered, countywide, there were 90, and in Bisbee, there were 37 unsheltered homeless people. So Bisbee had over one-third of the county's unsheltered homeless population. And those unsheltered people were primarily single male adults that were living alone as opposed to being in a family group. The point-in-time count surveys the people who are contacted, and most of these are countywide statistics that I'm going to be going over, but they asked how long they'd been homeless, and the two biggest categories were either less than 6 months or over 24 months, over 2 years. More than 50% of the homeless had been homeless. They asked the homeless people what they identified as the reason for being homeless, and unemployment or insufficient employment accounted for over 50% of the answers. Substance abuse, 14%. By choice, 8%, and that housing costs were too high, 6%. Of those homeless people in the county who were employed, 10% were employed part-time, 2% were employed full-time. They asked how long they had been living in Arizona, and over 70% had been in Arizona for at least 2 years or more. 28% had been here all their lives. And of the homeless people counted in the county, 90% spent the entire year in Arizona rather than traveling around to different states. The most common conditions being experienced by the homeless people, according to the surveys, were mental health, substance abuse, serious mental illness, or injury. So basically, we found that the primary reasons for homelessness nationwide are lack of employment and lack of affordable housing. We know that in Bisbee, approximately 26% of our population are living under the poverty level. And there are less than 200 rental units that are available in Bisbee for under $500 a month, according to Dr. Carrera's Bisbee economic update. And we also know that there are almost 300 people on the county's waiting list for HUD-subsidized Section 8 housing. So that means there is a multiple-year waiting list to get subsidized housing. So now we're going to look at the work groups, what their findings were, and some of their goals. Any questions first?
Maybe I missed it. Was there a breakdown of age groups of the homeless? Does it get that refined?
Well, the point-in-time count only identified whether people were youths, or if they were adults over age 24. And so we found that the majority, I don't have the percentage, but the majority, the largest category were single male adults over 24 years old.
Websites that I've looked at on this particular issue, it seems like, especially in the cities, it seems like a lot of the homeless, at least the visual thing that I saw, was a lot of older people, I would say, age 50 plus. That's what it looked like to me.
That's true. The homeless population is aging, for sure.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the point in time count didn't have really good raw data that we could use, and that's one thing that we are going to be working on is getting down to the specifics, getting better numbers.
I'm just kind of curious, did you all get a chance to do any interviews with the homeless people here in town?
We invited as many homeless people as possible to come to the meeting, and we had several had shown up, and they told us their stories. It was very fascinating. There was one gentleman became homeless after an accident where he had a brain injury, and has been spending years trying to get Social Security disability and is ready to lose his home. Other people had other stories to tell that were all very fascinating, but we didn't go out and interview, although one of our members, Ian DeRofi, has been doing some interviews with Bisbee's homeless people.
Was there any indication or feelings about which section of town do the homeless in Bisbee live in, like Old Bisbee, Warren, and or San Jose? Is there any breakdown on that? I don't know where the what
Ian,
particular.
Would you like to address that? Would you like to come up and tell us what you found?
I primarily encounter the homeless in the city in Old Bisbee, and I don't know that I can speak effectively on homeless people located in other areas of town, but I do believe that they're mostly concentrated in Old Bisbee.
Just a perception that I have. It seems to me that there is, lack of a better way to phrase it, probably a certain degree of part-time homelessness. They might have a place to stay for a day or two a week, and then the rest of the week they don't. Is there any indication how much that is? Do we know about that?
Well, and that's another factor that makes it really difficult to count the homeless. You know, you have people who are couch surfing. Are they homeless or not? Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. You have families and people who are experiencing domestic violence. Generally, they're not your really visible homeless in Bisbee because they tend to blend in with other families. When they lose their home, they move in with someone else. And you also, so basically, these are some of the factors that kind of contribute to the difficulty to putting an exact number on how many homeless people we have.
Another area that I'd be kind of interested to know what your perceptions or things that you might have studied and learned. Some cities in America have almost a hostility toward the homeless, and I saw maybe, I don't know exactly where I saw it, I think it was St. Petersburg, Florida, where they were tearing their tents down and evicting them, and they looked kind of intense, what I saw. How pervasive is that in America right now? Do you have any indication of that?
Well, we know from our research that there are some cities in America that have huge homeless encampments that become very problematic, more than 500 people, and it becomes a really an unmanageable situation. We also know that the federal government is looking at issues, and basically what they're saying is that, you know, some cities, what they do is they manage the homeless situation by passing ordinance to say you can't sleep in public, you can't, you know, hang around, loiter, so forth. And what the federal government is saying is that unless you have adequate housing for people who are homeless, you can't really criminalize their, you know, needing to sleep. So there's a variety of different responses that different cities have taken, and generally, if you have a homeless encampment situation that the city finds undesirable, you want to develop a procedure whereby you try to provide an alternative place for people to go and give them adequate notice before you would clear out an encampment. We've also found that there are some cities that have gone in the other direction, where they're providing so many services for the homeless people that they're actually attracting them from other areas. So, you know, it's a complicated situation, and we are basically have just scratched the surface.
I understand. Yes. I know the unemployment figures, I believe, were released last week, where they said unemployment's down around 5% now. But it's my thought and my perception that homelessness is probably increasing in America. Do you know much about that? It's a growing phenomenon, actually.
Well, from what I've read, actually, as most areas of the country, their economies are improving, so homelessness is becoming less prevalent. The federal government has plans to end homelessness. Specifically, veteran homelessness was a big focus. And in the last year, the homeless organizations, the American Red Cross, the VA, have all gotten together and funded initiatives to make sure that the veterans who are suffering homelessness get extra priority for housing. In Sierra Vista, the American Red Cross had a big effort that seems to be pretty successful. But as we know, in Bisbee and in Cochise County, our economy has not really perked up yet. So until we have more employment opportunities, I think we're going to be having a continuing problem with homelessness.
I'm kind of asking a lot of questions. I'll ask the council. I just have one more, then I'll be quiet for a while. It seems to me that one thing I would be extremely interested in is cities of comparable size to Bisbee that are sympathetic to this particular issue, and see what various solutions and ideas and what they have done. I think that would be extremely beneficial to the community, the council and the community, and whoever would like to look at that. So not sure if that is available. Must be sort of somewhere. Maybe 10 or 12 or 14 different cities that have that particular viewpoint, if you could maybe find that somewhere.
We will work to find that. Okay. We'll see what we can find out.
I've asked a lot of questions. Questions from Councilmember Hansen.
A lot of times there's a perception on the part of the public that people that are homeless want to be homeless. And I know that there was a lot of discussion early on. Looked at the numbers of people that truly just want to be left alone? And if that's a low percentage, or what percentage of the homeless population that is?
Well, we do know from the point in time count, they identified that 8% of the people said that they were homeless by choice.
By choice, okay.
Ian, have you gotten any more information on that as far as the Bisbee homeless population?
Most people that I've been asking have said that they don't want to be homeless. There's a very small percentage that says that they're homeless by choice.
And they've usually been homeless for a very long time. I just wanted to bring that out a little bit more because I know that there is a perception that people who are homeless want to be homeless, and I know that that's not necessarily the fact, the reality of it.
Yeah. And our focus is we want to see what we can do to make sure that services are available for anyone who is homeless or is at risk of becoming homeless. If they want help, that they know where to go to get the help. And that's our primary focus, to prevent and end homelessness in that way. But there's a lot more work to be done to identify exactly what services are needed. Yes, Shirley.
What criteria do you use to know that they are at risk of becoming homeless?
Well, that's a good question. We know that in Bisbee that there are a lot of people who are living pretty much paycheck to paycheck, and anyone who's living paycheck to paycheck, unless they have, you know, a bunch of money in the bank or relatives who can help and so forth, is kind of at risk of, you know, your car breaks down, you get a big auto repair bill, you're getting close to being at risk to becoming homeless. It's pretty much, I don't know if there would be any way to count that, and it's pretty much a matter of the particular person. You know, everybody knows if they're at risk of becoming homeless based on their personal situation. And what we want is, I mean, we're especially concerned about the families, the children coming out of the foster care system, graduating out of foster homes. What do they do? You know, they need to get jobs. If there are no jobs here, there's a lot of people who are possibly at risk of homelessness.
Can I ask, are there children homeless with their parents? Do we have that here?
The school systems have a coordinator who gets information, ask the kids, ask their parents, are you homeless? And the Bisbee Unified School District, it's called the McKinney-Vento Act that provides aid for students who are homeless. And I believe they said that the number over the last few years ranged from, I think, 3 to 20, something like that, Donna? Yeah. 20 was the high.
20 families, is that what that means? Okay.
Yes.
Now, that aid does not mean a separation from their parents, does it?
No.
It does not, okay. Okay. I'm encouraged to hear that.
Linda, I think that we might want to mention that we are trying to get the numbers from the Department of Economic Security Office here in Bisbee to talk about how many families are receiving food stamps, how many are on assistance. We do know that the CCAP funds that helps people with utility bills has no more funding available, so those funds are limited to helping people that have their utilities turned off or deposits that need deposits for apartments. There is no funding for that available. So We're trying to create more data to answer the questions that you raised.
Thank you. It's an issue of approaching people. It's very delicate, I'm sure. Very, very delicate. Because people, no matter if they're homeless or not, there's a certain amount of integrity about themselves that they want to maintain. So it's a very, very difficult, to a certain degree, and delicate situation in how you deal with these particular individuals. And their pride needs to be upheld at all costs.
Absolutely, yes.
Councilmember Sullivan.
I had one question. You mentioned that you came up with a draft police procedure. Is that something you're going to go into a little bit more?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll wait for that.
Yes. Yes. And that will be on the agenda next Tuesday to review the draft procedure. You'll have a copy of the draft procedure. And we're hoping that you will approve our recommendations. But we'll go into that a little bit more in this discussion. Okay, so now we are going to look at the findings and the goals of the various work groups. Early on in the process, our police chief, Echave, asked for a small brochure that lists the services that are available in Bisbee. What he said is that when the officers run into someone in need of a place to stay, food, etc., they really wanted to be able to have a little brochure to give them. And you have in front of you a copy of the Bisbee's Guide to Services. We put that together with the best information we could find about Bisbee. And Allison Williams, I need to give her a big thanks. Allison volunteered to do the layout and the logo. And I think she did a really excellent job making it look much more professional than we could have done without her help. So the goals of the brochure work group include to print and distribute Bisbee's Guide to Services, and that will be done in the next week or so. Simpatico Integrated Care is going to be printing the first batch for us at no cost to the city or the task force members, and we really appreciate Simpatico's work with that. And then the brochure committee will get back together and update that information every 6 months with changes. And we're going to change the color so that we can know this is the November version is going to be green, and next the next version will be another color to help keep track of that. Okay. Now we are going to talk about the mental health work group, and we're going to start out with a...
We cover Cochise, Santa Cruz, Greenlee counties, and what we do is we provide a peer-run peer support services for anybody that has a behavioral health need, a substance abuse recovery need, or coming out of prison, jail, homeless, you name it. We're not particular. We want to be a part of the communities. We work a lot with a homeless shelter here in Bisbee in Tintown, and then we ran across Dan that does this on a weekly basis. I believe he does it twice a week. And so we thought, well, hey, maybe we could network together, and you can help my people, we can help your people. So here we are feeding anybody who needs a lunch today.
What kind of satisfaction overall do you get from your work?
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding? Giving people hope and connecting them to community resources, whether they're faith-based, whether they're under the behavioral health umbrella, or whether, oh, my goodness, it's just food stamps, you know, whatever. That's giving people hope.
No, it could be something very simple that
yes.
People need help
yes,
with.
Yes,
now, do you find that you have... that the county is set up with organizations like yourself in such a way is that anybody who needs some help in some way can find it?
You know, these are new beginnings because this before has never been done. the level of networking between agencies, community services, and so forth, faith-based, non-faith-based. So we're into new territory of networking. So like that, I believe now in the last few years, there's so much help out there, and we're able to connect with each other. So if I can't help you, I will find somebody that can. If you need a job, we have resources like Goodwill, Job Connections, the One Stop. If you need medical insurance, we can get you hooked up with Access. We can also, we network with the Chiricahua Clinic, getting people their medical services that they need. Under the behavioral health, we're the strongest under the behavioral health umbrella because that's where our funding comes from, mm-hmm. most of our funding comes from. So we're able to help, people with special needs that have severe mental illness or have a substance abuse recovery that needs to be strengthened and so forth.
If a person feels like they need some or any kind of assistance, where would they start?
They can start. That's what we're trying to do with the task force here in Bisbee, is to have that information where it gets passed out. It's on bulletin boards and so forth. But the first thing is they can contact, either their churches or their behavioral health agencies here in town. There's ACTS, there's CIA. For instance, the homeless shelter, they have our information. Nowadays, the Chamber of Commerce, they're aware of the behavioral health agencies here in town.
And more organizations are becoming more and more aware of the services available and where to point people that are in need.
Yes.
Okay, that was Anique Price, one of our task force members who's with the Wellness Connection out of Sierra Vista. She's an outreach coordinator and was at the Gore Park lunches. Are there any questions? Well, Chuck gets the next set of slides up.
Any questions or comments from the council? Don't think so. Go ahead.
Okay.
I have a comment more than a question. I know early on one of the biggest factors was the awareness of the public. This brochure goes a long way. What other things are you considering or have you set up in order to inform the public of what can be done about homeless and mentally ill, how to approach someone who may be in crisis?
Well, one of the things that we've done is we've kind of established a close partnership with the Simpatico Integrated Care, and they're going to be providing a series of free community kind of a lecture series once a month where they will have speakers addressing different issues, mental health, treatment options, things like parenting, anger management, just a variety of subjects that are related to, it's kind of preventative measures to maintain good mental health. So that's one thing that that is going to be taking place probably beginning in January, February kind of time frame. And distributing the brochure to as many places as possible so that people are aware if they're in need, they'll know where to go and for help. And one of the main things that we want to do is to reduce the stigma related to mental illness and seeking treatment. So the community speaker bureau is going to work on that, and then also the NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Illness, will be providing the mental health first aid classes, which also helps people with the awareness of what to do if someone someone you encounter is having a mental health crisis.
And that's going to be here in Bisbee. There's going to be a session here.
We're hoping so. First round of the mental health first aid will be given to the police department. But we're hoping that they'll be able to have. I understand the mental health first aid classes are focused. Some are focused on first responders. Others. The educational system, and we're hoping to have some community options. It's a 8-hour class, so it is a commitment, but we're hoping to bring that to Bisbee. Okay, and so mental health work group, our first challenge was to try to understand how the system works. Mental health excuse me, homelessness and mental illness often go hand in hand. And so it took us a while to figure out how the Arizona Behavioral Health System works. But basically, for everyone in Arizona who is under the Access Medicaid kind of a program, the state of Arizona contracts behavioral health services. So basically, you have a regional behavioral health authority that has the contract with the state, and they basically manage the behavioral health system. Then under, in our case, it's Simpatico, is the regional behavioral health authority for Southern Arizona, and they contract with the local providers. So in our case, you have ACTS, and CIA, which are Arizona Counseling and Treatment Services, and Community Intervention Associates, are the local providers that provide treatment, case management, counseling, and so forth. There are also, off to the right, are specialty providers, which are also directly under Simpatico, and the Wellness Connection is a specialty provider. So basically the way it works is that your local provider will refer you to Wellness Connection. And if it is part of the program, your treatment program, Simpatico and the local providers can provide transportation over to Sierra Vista and so forth to participate in the activities that are part of the treatment plan. So basically, Simpatico is the regional health behavioral authority, the regional behavioral health authority for Southern Arizona. Simpatico contracts with CIA and ACTS for services. So we identified gaps in the behavioral health system as we understood them. And we wrote a letter to Simpatico, and we identified, you know, we said, we understand that you're in charge of behavioral health for our area, and we've identified certain gaps. Can you help us with them? And there's a copy of the Homeless Task Force letter to Simpatico and Simpatico's response in your packet.
Linda, can I just add something to that?
Yes, please.
The letter that was sent was also sent to the Simpatico representatives and all the other behavioral health agencies, too, wasn't it, to take a look at it, to make sure that the right approach was being taken and it wasn't an accusatory letter or, you know, something that would, you know, rub them the wrong way. And I think Linda and the people that did do this letter did a really, really top-notch job of keeping that conversation open, the communications open, and that rapport in order to go forward.
Yeah. The mental health work group put together the letter, and we did have some input from people to make suggestions on what we might ask for, what is provided in other jurisdictions, and so forth. And we did work really hard to not rub them the wrong way. And actually, Simpatico has really stepped up to the plate. Shortly after, in September, after we sent our letter, it just so happened that Simpatico had a community forum scheduled in Bisbee. And at that forum, they identified specific things that they will do for Bisbee in response to our letter. Provide the mental health first aid training for the first responders. Do the community education speaker series. Improve the grievance and appeal process to make it more understandable for people who are in the system who might have issues. And also they offered grant writing assistance to the Homeless Task Force for in issues that are related to behavioral health, their mission. They've also helped in drafting our police procedures. A couple of members of the division of Simpatico that takes care of the justice system and first responders are here, and we really appreciate their help. So, Chuck. So the goals of the mental health work group are, our immediate goals are to participate in the Simpatico Community Advisory Council meetings. These are meetings that are held every other month in Bisbee to get feedback from the community and from Simpatico, from behavioral health consumers, and we intend to keep participating in that to keep Bisbee's needs a high priority for Simpatico. And also another work group immediate goal is to assist Simpatico as they organize the community mental health education speaker series to help reduce the stigma of mental illness and increase awareness of mental illness and treatment options here in Bisbee. Any questions?
No.
Okay. Next work group is the First Responders Work Group. When the Homeless Task Force was formed, we were asked to help put together a police procedure for interactions with people who are experiencing mental illness. We're still in that same slide series. Oh. It wasn't totally blank. Well, okay. So what we did is we identified gaps, and some of those gaps are that there needs to be a procedure to help guide the police officers in the most appropriate ways to interact with people experiencing mental illness, to provide mental health first aid training to the officers, and that's a one-day class that was developed by the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And also that we in Bisbee needed a more effective way to utilize the mobile crisis team, which is NurseWise, which is a part of the Simpatico Behavioral Health Services. And
just the next slide will be right there. Okay, and next. And I wonder if maybe Beth or Amy from Simpatico could explain to us the mobile crisis team, which is also known as NurseWise. No?
No, you can explain.
Yeah, I will explain. So they stay here, go there.
Come on up. Thank you.
Just go ahead and mention your name in the microphone so the clerk's office has a record.
Good evening. Thank you guys for having us. My name is Beth Grady. I'm one of the first responder liaisons with Simpatico Integrated Care. This is my partner, Amy Devin. So our sole job at Simpatico is to work with first responders. law enforcement, ambulance, fire departments, and emergency departments. You've received a ton of emails from me, I'm sure, so I apologize. But I heard you're new in your position, so I wanted to reach out. So
we're nothing if not pushy attack.
Right. Assertive, if you will. So it's important to distinguish between nurse-wise, the providers, and simpatico, because we are very, very, very different entities. Simpatico is at the top. So their slide was brilliant. It clearly laid out. So then the providers are doing the mobile team, so it acts as your mobile team. So they're the ones going out in the communities, meeting with members in the communities when they're in crisis. And then nurse-wise is the hub of crisis. So you guys, I believe, have a nurse-wise card on your chair. And if you guys want more of these crisis cards, we can definitely get them to you. We have outreach staff that live in various counties that we cover, so they can come out to Bisbee, Sierra Vista, and whatnot, and drop off tons and tons and tons of materials, because we want our name and our information spread everywhere, so that people know. So we count on members of the community, such as yourselves, to educate the community on who we are and what services are available, and one of them being the crisis mobile teams. So it's important to remember that crisis services are available to everybody in our 8 counties, regardless of benefits. We don't care if you are homeless, if you have Blue Cross Blue Shield, or no insurance or access. It's available to anyone. So we have a separate pot of money set aside for crisis services. So we're going to look at insurance only if this member needs to go to a higher level of care. If they need to go to detox, respite services, then we're going to look at who's actually going to pay for the ongoing services. Also, if the member needs to get enrolled in services, then we look at if they have access or Blue Cross. So ongoing services for members with private insurance, that's not our deal, but we will help them get set up. We'll help them make the calls to their insurance company and get them, because navigating insurance is essentially impossible, regardless of your benefits. So do you guys have any, I could talk all night, but I know that we don't want to be
here. Nurse-wise, one more time. Yeah. Nurse-wise is contracted with us. So we have a contract with them, same as we do with many of our providers. We do have a very close working relationship with them. Our department and the crisis department, we work with them multiple times throughout the day. We have standing meetings with them, talking sometimes very specifically about procedures and how things went. When you think about how you get services for someone, when you call that 800 number that's on the card that ends in a 5, that number goes to NurseWise as sort of that call center. But they do so much more than that. But really, in thinking how that call gets triaged, or if an officer calls in, they get a certain their call gets triaged and prioritized. If someone in crisis calls in, if a family member in crisis calls in, a family member of someone in crisis calls in, all of those calls get, all you have to do is remember that one phone number for crisis services. They will then link the person to the mobile teams. If a mobile team is needed, if we need some services to come out to the person where they're at, it's one of our philosophies to bring services to the person where they're at. So it's a big push that we have to wrap services and to meet you where you are in more ways than one. So that's, in a nutshell, kind of how it's set up. It is very confusing, the terminology between simpatico, IC, nurse-wise. We are under the same umbrella company, but we work independent of each other, and we contract with each other to provide those services. So if you have additional questions for either of us, we can just read our business cards. We're very hands-on, company philosophy-wise. We personally, the two of us, believe in face-to-face contact. If we can get out there and get in person, we'll definitely do that. We both travel a significant amount of time, so we want to try and develop relationships and make sure that we're doing the right thing for the communities that we serve. We both are thick-skinned, so we can take it if something isn't working correctly or how you envision it to work, and we work very hard at improving those systems. So, and we do a lot of education, too, so we want to just make sure that you know who we are. We are in the crisis realm, so if you're starting to talk outside of the crisis realm, then it kind of gets outside of our scope, and we will make some referrals. But we'll probably circle back around and make sure that you got the information that you were requesting.
Questions or comments from the council? Council Member Sullivan.
Hi, ladies. Now, my question, I guess, is kind of a little bit outside of the crisis, but so you're saying that the crisis care is basically open to anybody that needs it. If you're in crisis, you'll come and take care of business. But a lot of people that are experiencing crisis, it's an ongoing thing. You know, they have some sort of mental health issue or whatever it is that is continuing to keep them in a state of depression or bipolar or whatever to go into the crisis. And a lot of these people that I've talked to, they tell me that they don't have insurance. Mm-hmm. They can't get insurance. And so they're kind of left outside of the box. And it's like those are the people that seem like they need the care the most, and yet they're not able to receive that ongoing care. Do you have anything to put into that?
So I have a few things. So there's a grant set up for members in the communities who are struggling with substance use and don't have any kind of insurance or any kind of benefit, or maybe their policy doesn't cover substance abuse, even though I believe they're legally supposed to at this point. So that's a possibility. However, if there's no access, unfortunately, we are limited in what we can provide as ongoing, because think of us as an insurance company. So we are the payer of services, so we are not going out into the communities doing therapy. We are not, personally, I'm not doing the mobile team stuff. So our providers are required to have staff that can help with the access application, because that's a challenge in and of itself. I don't know if you guys have ever looked at an access application. I've spent a lot of time in school, and I couldn't do it by myself. So they're required to help with that and get them set up with the marketplace if they qualify as well.
Okay, so you said there's a grant to cover substance abuse.
Substance abuse block grant, yeah.
Okay, substance abuse block grant.
Mm-hmm.
And so how would that help? That would be something the city, or who would apply for that?
Well, that's the money that we give to our providers. So the providers get a chunk of money for those members who don't have access or don't have benefits for substance abuse, and they can use that money. So each provider gets its own set of funding in the community. And I cannot tell you how much money they get. I don't know that much. I'm not privy to that knowledge.
Okay.
Anyone else?
The easiest way to access services is to use the conduit. That conduit is on the card, the 800 number. Tell them where you're at. Tell them what's going on. They'll want a little bit of information from you. They'll try and work with you right then if you're the person in crisis. They'll offer counseling services basically over the phone if that's something, you know, crisis intervention services. So that's probably the quickest way to get services at least initiated for someone.
Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, tonight in Phoenix, how many people estimated, of course, would be homeless on the streets tonight?
In Phoenix?
Yeah.
I couldn't even take a gander at that number.
Not something that
no, we don't work in Phoenix,
yeah.
In the Maricopa County. They have their own REBA. So we work in southern, Graham, Greenlee, Cochise, Yuma, La Paz, Pima, Santa Cruz. Okay. Those are our counties. Okay. And if you guys are not taking notes and you guys are confused, you have questions, I'll make sure you guys have my contact information. So reach out and ask questions. I'd rather you guys bombard me than not know what is going on in your community, because we want to make sure you know what's going on. And if I'm not the right person, which I probably am not, because my job is just first responders, but we'll make sure you know who to talk to. Yes, sir.
Are you able to give a number on the approximate number of homeless in the area you serve?
I don't, because that's not my scope. But if you guys want those numbers, we can see if someone else has them, yeah. Because we are in the crisis department, so we're not doing prevention. So we have a whole department that does prevention, the housing that you guys are working on. I saw Greg Taylor on your slides. So he does all that. So we're very piecemeal. So we have very, very specific jobs at Simpatico. Yes, sir, in the back.
Okay, so I get
part of why don't you come up to the microphone? I think it's better because we can hear you better and the people at home can hear you. Otherwise, they don't, will you be answering to a wall or something?
Just making it up.
It doesn't sound right on tape.
That's awesome that the person who's having crisis has that opportunity to contact you guys. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this more often than not, speak to a person who's been volunteering in the community I've lived in for many years, including King County, mm-hmm. Blue Beach Outreach Program, which unfortunately is no longer in existence, and just being an everyday Joe in the street, so to speak. I've had my share of encounters where I'm the first person that's given. Show I care about someone who's having a mental crisis, whether it's simply because of drugs or just simply their natural state of mind, if you will. What you said earlier seems like it is geared specifically for the person who's going to call. What about someone like me who's calling on their behalf?
That's what I was saying. Anybody can call. If you're an observer, if you see something happening and you're talking to somebody and you're concerned about them, you can call. It's completely okay. One of the things that we're trying to do is in a sense, steer away from all of the calls going to 911, because we all know that 911 response could potentially escalate somebody, and it's not necessarily the most appropriate use of those types of services. So if there's a different level or a different group of folks that might be better served and might be probably better equipped, in a sense, to then free up folks to, when you call 911, it was a great invention, 911, but sometimes it initiates an entire process that isn't necessarily the level of care that's needed at that time. So calling into the crisis line is anybody can do it. If you're in crisis, if you see a crisis, if an officer is on scene and says, I need a mobile team out here, perfectly appropriate to call in. If you don't get the level of care or the response that you expected, or if it doesn't make sense to you what's happening when you're on the phone with them, you can certainly stay on the line, ask to speak to a supervisor. Really, we want to improve that system. We did just get informed that there was another group of, I don't know how many, I think another 20 new employees starting. So every time you bring in a new batch of folks to work, obviously there's going to be a learning curve and things like that, so bear with us. We work very hard to make sure that the level of care and the customer service that we're providing is adequate and exceptional.
And one more thing, I also want to ask, to kind of expound on what Councilwoman Solomons asked, you know, about the ongoing services. Again, there are some people there, it's simply because of, and even a combination thereof, the use and abuse of drugs. What about ongoing services for a person who's, again, that's just who they are, if you will, and that has nothing to do with substance abuse? Again, would that be, have to fall into the same kind of same realm she brought up, or how would that work out? You know, it seemed like the way I understood it when you mentioned that question earlier, it was geared specifically for those who are in the state they are because of substance abuse.
So it's just another one of the aspects of services that are provided, and it's a pot of money. And it's oftentimes a segment of the population that ends up not being adequately served. Oftentimes people can't get into shelters or sheltering because they have issues with substance abuse, and their level of intoxication is such that they won't let them in. So it seems to be a topic that comes up. So I think we were probably just preemptively talking about specifically substance abuse. But no, I mean, there's no requirement that you have the only people that get served, this is not the case, are those that suffer from some sort of substance abuse, addiction issues, and in addition to behavioral health issues. So we get that it's a myriad.
Thank you.
Sure.
You had a question,
Jim? Where does Simpatico get their money, and how much do they have every year?
Oh, man. So we get our money from the state. So, again, we're contracted with the Department of Behavioral Health. Eventually, we're moving under Access. How much money we get, I don't know a lot. That's the finance department. So, again, if those are numbers, I don't know if they're published online, but we can ask for them. Yeah. So we get the money and then we give it to the providers to fund their programs, fund their clinics, hire therapists and whatnot.
It's all contract based. So we are very, as a company, we are very data driven. So we are finding out a lot of information all the time from those folks that we're contracted with, and we want to make sure that we're doing things the right way. So we're not just, you know, we're throwing our hands up. We're very active and very involved.
So you do have a training day scheduled for our first responders for Bisbee, or you already did the training?
I was not involved. I know that Kathy Aguilar and the county attorneys helped set up, that was my understanding, helped set up the mental health first aid. I don't know if there's a different answer. But I know that they were working on the mental health first aid, which is that 8-hour pretty intensive training.
City of Bisbee Police Chief Albert Chavez.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Yes, the training has been scheduled. It is for Friday. It is law enforcement specific. There was talk when we set it up of providing another course for more community oriented, which may be something to come later in the future. Most of the department is scheduled for the training on Friday. Well, half of the police officers and the rest will be scheduled at a later date, hopefully in January, and at that time everybody will be through the course.
And how about the EMTs and firemen?
This initial one we set up is the kind of the maiden voyage. We set that up with us and a few other law enforcement agencies have been invited to come to that as well. And then after that, then we'll continue to build on. Now, as we officers resign or move on to other agencies, there'll be and we hire new officers, and you know that'll be something that we'll have to continue to ensure they we continue to get those that training. And of course, if there's any updates or anything like that, we'd want to have a refresher when that time comes.
Great. So I have one more question while you're here. Have you utilized the crisis line for, you know, you come on site and you see someone's having a breakdown or whatever it is and you're like, oh, I need to call NurseWise?
Yes, myself personally, I've used it on a few occasions. Several of my officers have used it. And I showed Linda repeatedly through our meetings. I have the old cards, the cards you have and the new cards. But and almost all my officers, were given stacks of these to keep on their person, so that we can give them out to the family members, to the people who are involved. So, if you have a friend who's having a crisis, yes, without a doubt, you can call that number and get the help you need. It's not always a law enforcement, police emergency, criminal emergency when somebody's in crisis. That's a good resource to reach out to. We will respond. We use that. Sometimes we call ourselves. Sometimes we have our dispatcher make a call for us. But regardless, that is our policy right now. When there's a problem, that's who we reach out to, is NurseWise.
And so have you been there when the NurseWise arrived, and have you seen how it went and stuff?
Usually once they arrive, they take over, and we for most cases, then we leave. We're just there to.
So it seems to help. You know, you don't have to stay, and it sort of takes care of the situation.
It most definitely helps. There's even been the last time that I personally made the call. There was a neighbor who was willing to come and stay with the individual until the crisis team could arrive, and so both myself, the other officer that was with me, and the fire department were all able to go back into service, and we didn't have to stay there and wait for the team to arrive. So that's always an option as well. Family member can call and have that mobile crisis team respond. The police department, the police don't even have to know about it, you know, which sometimes is a, it helps the person in crisis knowing that the police aren't coming.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's an added stressor all by itself, and we understand that and realize it, but sometimes it's not an option. We have to be involved. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions or comments from the council?
How long is the average wait time for the crisis team to get there?
I would say usually between, just off the top of my head, I'd say between 30 minutes and an hour.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you so much for being here. Yeah. So it's a great system, the NurseWise Mobile Crisis Team, but what we found is that with a lot of the behavioral health issues is poor little Bisbee being here in the way corner of the state, far away from everything. A lot of times when the NurseWise was called, there was a significant delay getting the mobile crisis team on the scene. We understand that the standard is that the crisis team should arrive within 90 minutes, which is a long time. So this is one of the really successes is working with, you know, the Simpatico folks to make them aware, hey, we've got some issues, and then they consistently step up to the plate to improve services. So basically, where were we? Okay, so those were the idea, the things that we, the gaps we identified. Next slide. So we asked, one of our tasks was to work on a police procedure for dealing with people in mental illness, which of course would involve contacting the mobile crisis team, getting assistance, and so forth. So we asked to review and comment on the draft procedures that are currently being worked on. That wasn't possible, so what we did is we did research, and we found that after the Ferguson, Missouri incident and other related incidents of officer-involved shootings, there's been a lot of research being done on the subject of appropriate policing methods and so forth. President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, International Association of Chiefs of Police, Police Executive Research Forum, and And what we found is that the current theory is that, of course, officer safety is the first priority, and also that traditional police training methods may not be the most effective for people experiencing mental illness and crisis. Police are generally trained to hit the ground running, make quick decisions, command and control methods, which work in most situations, but not so much with the mentally ill. There's special skills required, slow down the process, de-escalate the tension, get assistance from behavioral health professionals such as the NurseWise Mobile Crisis Team. So what we did is we researched police procedures that we could locate on the internet. Many cities actually put their procedures manuals online, and we selected the best that we could find, that especially that would be applicable to a small city like Bisbee. And we selected the city of Truro, Massachusetts as our base policy and supplemented it with International Association of Chiefs of Police model policy, 2014 model policy. So basically, we cut and pasted to blend the best we could find into our draft procedure that we're going to present to you next week. Okay. First responder work group goals are to have the Bisbee, have the city of Bisbee adopt the draft procedure for interacting with people who are experiencing mental illness or in crisis, and provide mental health first aid training for the first responders, which Albert explained is already in process. We understand that NAMI and Simpatico are funding the entire cost of the training, and we really appreciate that. Okay, next work group is the housing work group. We're going to have a short interview with the Bisbee Homeless Task Force member, Kathy Calabrese, who is the director of the Good Neighbor Alliance Homeless Shelter in Sierra Vista.
Good Neighbor Alliance, I think, is an awesome agency. We are so much more than a homeless shelter. And that's important for people to know because we work really hard in trying to get our people off the streets or out of the shelter into housing. But more importantly into mainstream services that are going to hopefully help keep them housed. Because if they become housed, that's when the hard work starts, keeping them housed. In my mind, homelessness becomes a whole different culture than what we're kind of used to, you know, in mainstream life. And it just becomes different. And then they have to learn how to survive in that culture. Mm. I was really encouraged that there were people in the community getting together to try to understand, first off, homelessness. But then I think it took on a newer meaning that maybe it's just not homelessness, it's all about mental illness as well. And I think that's really encouraging that they got together. I think there's a different level of tolerance sometimes. I think that it seems like that Bisbee is pretty tolerant about the street people. But also there's a lot of ministries and things being done for people out on the streets. So that might change the whole,
dynamic
mm-hmm. and also the amount of resources that are available. Mm-hmm. I know that's got to change the dynamic of mm-hmm. the homeless condition. Mm-hmm. And I think that instead of just becoming part of Cochise County, Bisbee wants what other municipalities have in terms of helping their homeless population. And homelessness, my colleagues up in Phoenix would say it's doable. I'm not necessarily sure that can happen. I think it's always going to be fluid because I believe that not everybody's going to get the help they need when they're in crisis, i.e., when they're going to lose their place, because it just doesn't always happen. And the population that we deal with, and even Good Neighbor Alliance, when things aren't going well for us, it's really hard to ask for help. And it's even harder to ask for money. But those are two things that, it's hard to do for people. So when people are in crisis, it's really hard for them to reach out, and then things go poorly and they end up in the streets. So I am not that encouraged that we can change that. It would be nice if we didn't have a job here at Good Neighbor Alliance and we didn't have homelessness. But I believe that that's not going to happen. We're going to make a huge dent in it. They might need different resources in Bisbee than we do in Sierra Vista. Mm-hmm. And then they might be forced to look at also that if we can maybe beef up transportation between Bisbee and Sierra Vista or Bisbee and Douglas, that possibly there might be more resources available to the people mm-hmm. in Bisbee. You know, there's no easy fixes when it comes to homelessness and mental health. And that's what people want. A lot of people want a magic wand to fix it. That's not going to happen. You have to work within the systems because there are eligibility requirements for every program. There are some people can't go into certain programs because of they don't have a determination or they do have a determination. So, and technically, for example, we have a PATH vehicle. We have a pickup truck, and we are technically only supposed to transport people who are signed up for the PATH program. So if somebody's not seriously mentally ill, then technically, then we can't transport them in our PATH truck. So that's one of those. That's just an example of how our systems work. And it's not just Bisbee; it's the way our systems are mm-hmm. built. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that some things can get better. But unfortunately, when each government program has certain requirements and eligibilities, that's always going to be difficult. Even though they're part of Cochise County, I do believe that homelessness in each area is a community problem. Mm-hmm. So the community has to try to find their way mm-hmm. through that.
Thank you. Over the years, the theories have changed about the best way to house homeless. The previous approach was to provide emergency shelters and transitional housing, such as halfway houses, and provide permanent housing when the individuals are ready. They're sober, they're in treatment, etc. But the current theories are that the best way to approach homelessness are to previous slide. First, prevent homelessness wherever possible. Do rapid rehousing, which is to get people rehoused quickly with temporary subsidies when they do become homeless, and then for the mentally ill and chronically homeless to provide permanent supportive housing, which is housing with services built in. And the housing first model, which is no conditions prior to housing. So rather than requiring people to get sober, the current theory is that once somebody is in a stable housing situation, they're much more likely to be able to successfully make their way through sobriety or whatever is their mental health situation or whatever it takes to stay in housing. So they now provide housing with no barriers and include wraparound supportive services. Next slide. In Bisbee, we found there is a lack of permanent supportive housing, a lack of affordable housing, and then we also found that Simpatico provides housing for the seriously mentally ill, but there were none available in housing. People are referred to Sierra Vista, Benson, possibly Douglas. So the work group goals are to, in response to our letter, Simpatico is working on purchasing two houses in Bisbee to rehab for permanent supportive housing for people who are seriously mentally ill in Bisbee. So we want to help them with that, to work towards obtaining grants for permanent supportive housing for the chronically homeless using the Housing First model. And also, we would like to see low-income housing in the city's strategic plan. We understand the mayor's working on a low-income housing project in the San Jose area, and we really applaud that effort because affordable housing is definitely a need. Next work group. Yes, go ahead.
I want to interrupt you just for a minute because we have Karen Ulich here from Simpatico. She's the housing specialist. And I think that she came from Tucson to attend this meeting and answer any questions anybody might have about housing that is available through Simpatico. And so I just wanted to make sure that we all knew that we had this resource here.
Yeah. So why isn't there any housing for SMI people in Disney? You say there's for Douglas and Sierra Vista, but why not Disney?
Go ahead and state your name so the clerk's office knows who you are.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Karen Ulick, and I'm the new Director of Housing Administration for Simpatico. And I think historically the system has developed more in response to the strength of the provider network that exists in different communities and different areas, and it's been quite spotty. And the relationship that really the state has been able to establish in local communities. So I can tell you there's a real commitment on the part of Simpatico, and I think my colleagues really stated it very well, that we're real interested in working with you all on the ground to better understand where the gaps are and to make sure that Simpatico develops a network that's more responsive. I can't speak as much to the history. This is my first, maybe second week on the job with Simpatico. But I can speak to, number one, Simpatico's real respect for and appreciation of the work done by the task force here and our commitment to help deliver on these goals and others that are established by your community.
Here,
yes.
I'm not sure if you really answered my question. Why is there no housing available for SMI people in Bisbee? Could you make that super simple so okay. that they understand it?
Sure. So there's pots of money available to develop housing, and most of those pots are mobilized by community grant applications or agencies within the communities or other strategies. And all I know is that clearly those seeds haven't been planted here sufficiently. But I can't point a finger, and I don't know that, you know, looking back is going to really create the housing that we want versus now that there's clearly fertile ground, let's get to it together to make sure it happens. I'm not as equipped to speak to the past as I am to the future.
I think if you looked at the interview that we just saw with Ms. Kathy Calabrese, is that somehow there's the perception that Bisbee's got a handle on this. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned the ministries that assist perhaps to a greater extent than in other parts of the county. And so this was the real need for this task force to assess this and to make the other powers that be, if you will, aware of the fact that Bisbee really hasn't been included for reasons that I'm not able to explain either. But one of the perceptions is that Bisbee somehow or another takes care of itself sufficiently. And, of course, we found out that that's not necessary.
Yeah, but ACTS is under Sympatico. So ACTS doesn't give money for SMI housing. So Sympatico should say ACTS, here's money for you to give SMI people housing. Isn't it that simple?
I'd like to comment because it ties what you're both talking about here, and you're saying there is money available. However, Bisbee hasn't gotten access to it because Bisbee's not applying for it, and a huge factor in that is Bisbee doesn't have a community development corporation that is focused on housing to go after those kind of grants. So that's a huge gap that's been mm-hmm. identified, mm-hmm. and when the ULI people came to Bisbee, that was one of their recommendations that they made was you should seriously investigate starting a community development corporation. So that's something that can happen, and
I would agree with that. There are different pots of money, HUD money, state money, and other resources. So again, depending on which pots of money are particularly responsive to the needs that you identify, I think that's going to really set the action plan moving forward. So I think that, like I said, the ground is real fertile here for some good progress.
So if I was SMI and I wanted rent subsidy, which organization would I go to? ACT, CIA, or, I mean, which one does actually give out the money for rent subsidies for homeless people? Which is it, ACT that does it?
Right now, it's my understanding that there are specialty providers. For example, there's an agency based in Tucson that has been working with an agency, Pasadena, which has HUD grants. And so there is some limited rental subsidy assistance. It's actually not the state money. It's a HUD grant that specifically serves Cochise County and Bisbee. And there are some tenants under that program in Bisbee. So I think there's a patchwork. But clearly, from your questions, it's not clear to anybody what's available, how do you access it, and how can we build on it? So it seems to me those are the goals we've got to continue.
Sympatico has money to give to homeless people for rent subsidies, is that correct? Sympatico has the money?
Through the providers, as my colleagues noted, Sympatico doesn't hold on to the money generally. We work with those agencies and allocate the housing funds at their request and based on their own capacity and their own requests. So
who do you give the money to for rent subsidies for homeless people? Is it ACTS or is it CIA?
Linda, have you?
Well, I think ACTS and CIA are basically equivalent. They're local providers. And I think that it's my understanding that Sympatico provides housing for people who are seriously mentally ill and possibly somewhat in the substance abuse realm. Mm-hmm. But homelessness per se, unless it goes along with mental illness or substance abuse, it actually is not under the Sympatico's generous umbrella. And that's why we're so happy to have developed the relationship with Sympatico so they can help us kind of navigate the system. We go, hey, we need housing, and they'll like say, oh, you could do it this way or that way or that way, and then we can work together.
Absolutely.
Perhaps do joint grant applications and really meet the needs that we have. So they're a great resource moving forward.
If I may interject here, as we continue on, when someone's speaking from the audience, you really need to go up to the podium because we're probably getting dead air out there in the community, and people are tuning out when they get dead air. So we'll go up to the podium, and whether you have a question or a comment or whoever, whatever speaker, you really need to come up. And when you come up, state your name.
Jed Henry Kowski. I just want to say, as someone who's been homeless and became very close to being homeless a second time around, I have gone to the CIA, different agencies out here in town, and found, with the exception of one, which was, well, that's another story for another day, as they say, unless you are SMI or, like to point out, substance abuse, you cannot get any kind of funds to even help with sometimes what can make the difference between homelessness and keeping home. It's something as simple as an electric bill, which has happened to me. Thank God there was no second time around, but like I said, I came very close, and there's got to be another way, because it really is. If you're not SMI, you're SOL, you know, and there's got to be another way where you don't have to jump through hoops of trying to get a little bit of help to help with, to keep from going down the homelessness route. Thank you.
Ian Dorfey was signed up. Did you want to? I know you spoke earlier. Would you like to come up now?
This is a product of having attempted to engage the homeless to participate in this homeless task force. I do not expect this to be popular, but I'm not running a popularity contest. So, you know, this is just to address the reason that the homeless have given me for not wanting to participate.
So I just want to clarify, you're talking about the homeless not wanting to participate in the task force, correct?
Exactly.
Okay, just so everyone knows that.
So I apologize if this is difficult. But, you know, I've asked, and this is what it's come down to. The specific rules of the homeless task force forbid me from being able to specifically address specific incidents, so I have to address it in a very general way. My name is Ian Drofey. I'm here to speak tonight about Housing First and the impediments to this program in Bisbee. Utah has used this program over the last 10 years to reduce homelessness from 1,964 people to 178 people. Now, other states and cities are looking to utilize this program to create a path to housing for the homeless. Utah First undertook this program because the cost of policing, emergency medical care, and social services cost the state $1,700 per month to keep someone homeless, while it only cost $1,100 per month to house the homeless person. These programs focus on rapid housing and offer but do not require additional supportive services such as mental health and drug rehabilitation for people to receive and retain housing. However, Utah has found that people are more receptive to these services once they know that they have stable guaranteed housing. In order for Housing First programs to be effective, homeless persons must be engaged by persons that they know they can trust. Trusted homeless advocates who can reach this community desire to work with leaders that they know are truly dedicated to helping these homeless persons who trust them. Bisbee is a small town, so small that it is best not to have secrets, because the truth does indeed always come out. When I began with this task force, we had three very capable homeless advocates who could effectively network with the homeless. Now I am the only one left in regular attendance. The other homeless advocates are absent from participation in this committee because of a lack of trust for the leadership. If Bisbee is to be effective in the creation of solutions to homelessness that are not just pushing the homeless away, as I truly believe is the desire of this city, This task force needs the current leadership to step aside so that we can re-engage the other homeless advocates who are the people that will be most effective in engaging the homeless themselves.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
I think that was a really powerful statement, and I think you're speaking truth to power myself. And I think that the task force, while I'm just getting to know the folks and the players, I'm not sure many would disagree that, and in fact, in Simpatico, there's a very strong commitment to what's considered peer leadership, and that's what you're talking about as well. And it's true of all of us, isn't it? I mean, that we respect people who understand where we're coming from. So I hope that as we move forward in partnership, that we can hear that message as Simpatico, as a part of the group. And I would suspect that all of us learning together about this are going to try to find ways to make sure that homeless people are at the table, helping to lead, and helping us to find solutions. I think there's a real commitment to that. So, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Sullivan, did you have a comment?
I do. I have a comment and a question. First, my comment addresses what Mr. Dorfey just stated about it is his opinion that the city of Bisbee wants to push the homeless away.
No. I'm sorry. Yeah, I think there's a mistake.
Okay.
The city of Bisbee does not want to do that.
Okay. I was just going to say, I want to speak on behalf of the city of Bisbee and say that that is not what we want. We truly want to help these people get on their feet and find solutions. And otherwise, we wouldn't be taking this time to do this tonight and the time out of our own lives. And but anyway, my question was, I heard that the homeless camp behind Safeway got bulldozed because of the task force. Is that something that occurred? Because that was what I heard, and I know that that had a huge effect on the homeless perception of the task force, feeling that their only option for shelter was bulldozed.
I'd like to address that. First, I appreciate Ian in taking part in the homeless task force, and I hope that more people in the homeless community can come forward. As far as the history, I live in the San Jose area, and for several years there was a problem in that there's city property behind the Safeway that everybody should be able to enjoy. It's between my property and the Safeway. And so I used to like to walk my dog through there. But it came to be that there were many homeless people. You know, you would see a homeless person from time to time. And then a big homeless encampment was developed. And it was no longer safe to walk through there because there was broken glass, there was trash, it just really felt like we were invading someone else's place when we wanted to walk through that city property. So I went through the process as I knew it, and I talked to the city about, you know, enforcement issues. I went to the neighborhood watch meetings and said, hey, we have an issue. We hear there's, you know, registered sex offenders that are living here, and we don't feel that it's safe. And we were told that by the police, well, at one point, the city manager said, okay, let's get this place cleaned up. And the neighborhood participated in a cleanup. I don't know whether notice was given or not, but everybody's kind of learning as they go along. And it was cleaned out. Then more homeless people showed up. We talked to the neighborhood watch group, and we were told, well, you know, that's really the best place for them to be, because we can keep the police there. We can keep an eye on them. Well, shortly after that, the shooting occurred, so it really didn't work out okay. It wasn't okay for the neighbors, and it probably wasn't so okay for the people who lived there. So that is true that happened. But after the shooting, we said, hey, there needs to be something looked at to see if there's better ways to approach this problem, to provide services that are needed to the homeless while maintaining peace in the community. And that's where we came from. And we've worked very hard for 6 months. And I think Bisbee is a small town, and people talk and complain and so forth. I hope that new leadership does step forward and go through the analysis and the logical process that's needed to identify the problems, engage the different agencies that can help, engage, of course, the homeless people as well. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to just make this a better community for everyone. That's what I was trying to do in my 6 months.
Can I ask you a question? Because I hear the words plowing, and I've spent time back there. I used to walk my dogs there every day, and I saw the various encampments. At one time, there were four or five encampments there. I never encountered any problems with any of the people, and I was there just a few days ago, and I've never seen any evidence of quote-unquote plowing. Mm-hmm. There just isn't any evidence of that. Clean up, yes. And typically when the people, for whatever reason, would leave, their former presence is still quite well known, and for some time, you know, because there would be trash and that sort of thing. But in terms of the people ever hassling me or my dogs, there was never a problem like that. And once again, I'd like to say, because I hear this word plowing, and I've heard it before tonight, and quite frankly, I don't see any evidence of that.
I've walked through there, and I've never encountered any problem.
Not that there weren't problems, but I personally...
I've never personally encountered any from anybody.
Right.
We have some more work groups to go through. We're happy to answer any questions. And just for your peace of mind, we are going to be rotating facilitators in with the homeless task force, so there's plenty of opportunity for people to be involved, work with the task force, and work towards solutions in whatever way they feel is most appropriate.
Do you know who took down the Carlos Memorial?
I don't know. Okay. I think we're up to
Ms. Weiland, let me ask this real quick. We've been here for 2 hours. Some people might need a 10-minute recess. I mean, I don't know how much longer we're going to go on, but I see people moving legs a little bit.
We probably have at least another half an hour, so recess would be great.
What do you think, counsel? Want to take a 7-minute recess and come back? What do you think?
I'd rather keep going and get done with this myself, but...
That's what we'll do.
Sally Holcomb just joined us also, and she's the new director for Simpatico, right?
Regional manager.
Okay.
Thank you for being here, Sally, and thank you for all of you who waded through that I-10 mess. Okay. Next work group is the Justice System and Courts Work Group. We've learned that the justice system is especially important in Bisbee relative to homelessness, because Bisbee is the hub of the county's justice system. The jails are here. Most of the courts are in Bisbee. When people throughout the county are arrested, they are brought to jail in Bisbee. And if they're homeless, they may be released to jail from jail to Bisbee. And due to the lack of transportation, sometimes those people stay around, hang around Bisbee awaiting their court date. We've learned from reliable sources that up to 70% of the inmates in the Cochise County Jail have mental illness issues, and approximately 60% of the people in the Cochise County Jail are there for minor offenses. Next slide. Okay. Nationwide, there's been a move towards jail diversion programs for people who are mentally ill or have substance abuse issues. Rather than sentence them to jail, they enter a court-ordered program to participate in treatment. They check in with the judge, and as long as they follow their treatment program, they stay out of jail. Arizona has the Arizona Plan to End Homelessness, and one of their goals is to prevent inmate release to homelessness by December 2015, which is next month. Next slide. So jail diversion programs are very effective, but they are more labor intensive. It's been brought to our attention that the issues that the group identified were the need for more coordination of services, the need for more resources at the jail, and the need for funding and staff for a jail diversion program in JP1, which is Bisbee's Justice Courts. It's been brought to our attention that these problems have already been identified, and the county agencies are working independently to improve these processes. Next slide. There is currently in Sierra Vista Justice Court, which is JP5, they have what they call a care court, and that is a jail diversion program for people who are mentally ill, have substance abuse issues, or the veterans. JP1, which is the Justice Court in Bisbee, is working on developing a mental health court, but at this point it's less organized and less well-funded. Next slide. Mm-hmm. So the goals of the Justice System and Courts Work Group are to provide Bisbee's Guide to Services to the jail and the county agencies, to support mental health or care court system for the Bisbee area, to improve the jail intake and release process, and we would also like to see Simpatico integrated into the process that the county's going through to reorganize their court system. Simpatico has responsibility for behavioral health services in the jail, and they may be able to provide resources to help the county meet the state goal of no inmates released to homelessness in Bisbee by December 2015. The last work group is the one-stop shop work group. One-stop shop is a place to coordinate services in one location. And at one of our first brainstorming sessions, we found there are lots of services, but a lack of coordination. The city manager, Justin Johnson, suggested that we look into a one-stop shop. Now we're going to hear a short video from Susan Lange, Homeless Task Force member and the facilitator of the one-stop shop work group.
I apologize. It's the nature of the program to start the audio before I can get to the video.
Homeless shelter one-stops have been organized around the country for a number of years, like when two California cities united to provide multiple services in one place in 2006. In Maryville, California, a one-stop was established for the homeless and their pets, adding to the long list of human services, health, education, job searching, computer access, and mail delivery, for instance. The one-stop committee of the Bisbee Homeless Task Force has identified the homeless shelter in Tintown as the ideal location to set up a one-stop for Bisbee's homeless. Already, the Tintown shelter offers a pantry and showers, dinner every night and a place to sleep, blood pressure monitoring, and a monthly mobile medical unit that invites anyone to just drop in, regardless of ability to pay.
Well, the idea is to bring multiple services under one roof to improve access to care. So we're talking about things like probation, legal services, medical services, eventually dental services, social services, you know, assistance with filling out applications, social security, disability applications, those sorts of things, so that this population doesn't have to travel to access, you know, those kind of resources and services. Eventually, there'll be a calendar of services for the staff here at the shelter so that if somebody comes in or calls and says, you know, I need to see a probation officer, but I'm not able to, I don't have a vehicle and I can't go to that appointment, we can say, you know, on Thursday of next week, the probation staff will be here and they can see you. If somebody comes in with a medical problem, the staff here will be able to tell them, you know, the clinic is here the fourth Monday of every month, or you can utilize the standalone clinic here in Bisbee. So we have developed and started a resource book for the staff so that they know what services are available and when they will be coming to the shelter. We're talking about drop-in services and one-stop shopping. So the drop-in services are things like checking emails, maybe taking a shower, washing your clothes, getting a meal, those sorts of things. And those services are available just about every day of the week now at the shelter. But we would like to see some of those services increased. So that means more staff, volunteers to make that happen. And then the one-stop shopping are actual services that other agencies provide. So they come here to, you know, improve access. And the other advantage would be that, you know, staff feels free to call the agency and whatever agency it is and ask, you know, for solutions to whatever the problem might be. One of the things that we've talked about in our task force is releases of information. So each agency bringing their release of information so that we have signed releases of information which allow us to talk to other agencies and try to solve problems. That's been one of the barriers in the past where we haven't had the ability to openly communicate with other agencies. And the result is that things often don't get resolved.
Okay, any questions? We've got just a few more issues and then we're done. Okay, U is the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness. It's an independent agency of the federal executive branch. It's made up of 19 cabinet-level governmental agencies. And their recommendation is to build capacity in the community to identify and engage people who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless, to intervene to prevent loss of housing, quickly connect people to housing assistance and services, provide immediate access to shelter and crisis services without barriers while permanent stable housing and appropriate support is being secured. This is what the Homeless Task Force wants to do with the one-stop shop. Next slide. The goals of the one-stop shop work group are to provide a schedule of services at the shelter that's already in operation and to expand the services by adding more agencies. So as you can see, the community and many different agencies have come together to help prevent and end homelessness in Bisbee, and we would need your continued support to be successful and the support of the community. There's one last film clip from Tom Rudin, Homeless Task Force?
I can't really tell you what the task force will recommend, but I'm recommending to the task force as part of the mental health group that mental health first aid training as a minimum be included in mandatory training for police officers in Bisbee. That will give us some assurance that once they're all trained, it won't happen overnight because they've got a small force and they have to be very careful how they juggle their time. But once we see, when you look at training records and you see officers are required by city policy to be trained in this area, we can all feel a whole lot better. Because a lot of it, some of it depends on their experience. It depends on their own attitudes. This kind of thing is too important to be left to individual officers. It's got to be part of city policy and police policy. Now we see a shift. We see a grassroots effort in Bisbee, which I believe is a splendid effort, to say to city government, we want to change things. And the best way to change them is to have city policy change. That's done by the city council. So hopefully when the task force reports to the Bisbee City Council on 17 November, the council will take heed of our recommendations and make appropriate changes in police training policy. We know from national figures that there's a tremendous amount of people in the country who have some form of mental illness or interaction with the mental health system. In fact, the mental health first aid course will tell us that a police officer is more likely to encounter a person in an emotional or mental health crisis than they would with someone having a heart attack. One thing that I learned working with this task force, Bisbee has tremendous intellectual talent. I was really, really pleased to see all the people who came together with not only with complaints but recommended solutions. Bisbee has a rich pool of intelligent, intellectually motivated people in their city, and I was really pleased to be part of it. No one should underestimate the power of Bisbee in terms of intellectual power, in terms of citizenship recognition, in terms of doing the right thing. And we're seeing an absolutely spectacular grassroots effort in this task force to create an environment that is going to be conducive to change. I predict it'll be win-win for everybody. Like right now, there's a lot of folks who are somewhat suspicious of the task force. This is something new. Change is always difficult. But I believe once the council understands and gets the report, I think we will see positive change take place, directed as it should be, from the city council. This is all about win-win. I think there is a place at the table for the county, especially the county health department. We're talking about mental health issues, and we've done some research on the internet, and some county health departments are engaged and some are not around the country. That's what we have to determine. Is there a function for this county health department to be engaged in this, I would say, this mental health renaissance? I would like to think they'll find a way to do that. I'm optimistic about that. Success breeds enthusiasm. I think that's what we're seeing here. The amount of public excitement and interaction and volunteerism here, it hasn't slacked off since day one. Normally, it's been my experience with these things, the momentum tends to wane after a while. That is not the case for this task force. Every time we have a meeting, we have a full house, more or less. And we have the same people coming back and new people coming at every meeting just to see what's going on here. And we welcome that. But this is definitely going to be, I believe, a tipping point, a renaissance moment for Bisbee. Task force has done a remarkable job, in my opinion, as a grassroots volunteer organization to look at a problem and say, we have got to get a handle on this, and that's just what they're hoping to do. And I think the city council will be very pleased when they hear the report on 17 November.
Okay. Now we're just going to go over the task force recommendations really quickly. We would recommend that the city council adopt the police procedure for interactions with persons experiencing mental illness or in crisis. It's based on best practices recommended by the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and I think it would be a good procedure. We would encourage first responder participation in the Simpatico Cochise County Crisis System quarterly meetings. The Simpatico Crisis Protocols for Cochise County established quarterly meetings to facilitate collaboration between the behavioral health system, law enforcement, the courts, the jail, and local providers to build on strengths and resolve barriers to coordinating services. We would recommend that the city support partnerships in grant applications. Two members of our task force have completed the Cochise College grant writing series, and we would like to work with local nonprofits to apply for grants that meet joint goals, and we would hope for a city letter of support and possible help with grant administration on issues on a case-by-case basis that we would bring to the city council. The Southeast Arizona Governmental Agency, SEGO, has hired a grant writer and will be asking cities to identify their top three priorities as far as researching grant opportunities. We would encourage the city to adopt economic development strategies, especially focusing on employment, training, and small business startups, and also affordable housing as two of their three priorities. And then we would also request that the city continue to provide the council chambers for a meeting place for the homeless task force. The task force has accomplished a lot in less than 6 months. Moving forward, they plan to continue to meet the first Tuesday of each month, have established a new work group to refine data and look at grant opportunities to accomplish the goal of preventing and ending homelessness in Bisbee. So we recognize that it's difficult to please everyone and give everyone what they want. The Homeless Task Force is asking the city to allow us to continue to contribute by seriously evaluating the needs of the homeless and the needs of the entire community and helping the City Council to strike a balance that will help improve quality of life for everyone in Bisbee. Thank you.
Thank you. Any final comments or questions from the council? Councilmember Sullivan.
Excuse me. I was hoping to hear more action recommendations. I understand it's a long process, and you guys are doing your evaluation, and I support everything you recommend up here pretty much. But I had heard talk of providing some more immediate services that the homeless need, like I know showers are only available 2 days a week at the shelter for drop-in services, and there was talk of asking the city to open up the city park or the city pool once a week for showers. Is that something that's...
Well, what we wanted to do is, on this round of recommendations, focus on things that were doable that would cost the city little or no time or staff involvement. We had the suggestion to open the pool showers. We talked it over with the city manager, and really it seems like there are some downsides to that. It would require somebody to supervise the pool shower facility. Our focus is we would like to pretty much focus things on the one-stop shop rather than pull people who apparently there's a certain number of people who have been banned from the homeless shelter due to either substance abuse or disorderly conduct, whatever. And we would actually rather bring everybody together to the one-stop shop rather than splintering them further off away from the homeless shelter. And so that's why we have a whole list of long-term, short-term goals, which is in your packet, two pages. We wanted to kind of focus on the real doable, the real inexpensive, and for sure they would work kind of solution. So and we kind of ruled that one out, but it's not totally ruled out. We need to really find out what are the actual needs.
That's the actual need. I'm very disappointed to hear that that's not even being brought up. I know these homeless people, and I know that that's something they need. They need to wash their clothes. They need to wash their bodies. They need blankets and jackets. It's cold. It's getting cold. And I haven't heard any of these real issues even come up. It's also extrapolated into the bureaucratic process that no wonder the homeless guys don't want to participate. And I think I really want to support what Mr. Dorothy stated, which was you need to really connect with those guys again and get them back in there. That would be something I feel super strong about. But I also really respect the work you're doing. And I know it's a lot of work, and I know you're volunteering, but don't forget the most important thing, which is the homeless people themselves and what they're asking for and what they're saying that they need.
For sure. And I would hope that they would come forward, join us, tell us what they want, and then we can focus more effectively on their actual needs that and wants that they're asking for.
Let me say that I appreciate Councilmember Sullivan's comments very much. Is there any other comments or questions from the council? Councilmember Hansen.
I just want everyone to realize that this is a work in progress, and I understand where you're coming from. However, there is room for this to happen later on. It's not it kind of had to pick and choose what was going to happen first. But this is by no stretch of the imagination the end of things that the task force is looking at doing to improve specifically for the homeless to get them a place where they can do their laundry. They're doing that now. That is open 5 days a week or
two.
I thought that was just the showers. I thought that the laundry was open.
I'm not sure.
But anyway, it's baby steps mm-hmm. in order to get that the whole system in. Set up so that it can be expanded mm-hmm. and that the one-stop shopping, I mean, this is just the start of that. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I am just floored about how much was able to get done in the time that the task force has been working together. And it was also so thrilling, for the lack of a better word, to see people working together and coming up with solutions rather than just complaining about this, and this. Actual solutions were brought to the table as to how we can work better, and that just the network of the different agencies and how they work, that was a tremendous thing that happened. The one-stop shopping, or one-stop shop, that idea, that whole idea was from the very start, and to see that actually be happening now in that short of a period, I think is absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's such a tribute to the people that were on this task force. So we're getting there.
Sorry, I hope I didn't come off too strong, and I do totally appreciate the work that's been done, and I know it's been a lot of work. I just really wanted to reiterate, you know, what I hear from the guys on a weekly basis, and of course they're biased, but you know, by the guys, guys.
that's good to know. That, you know, now we've got a priority, you know, set up, or you know, they can look at that as a priority in trying to get that done. So. And I think you were spot on with what you said, Mr. Dorothy.
And I hope the community can build on the foundation that we've started with. And I appreciate the opportunity to have the work session, and I appreciate everyone who was here and your interest in improving things for the homeless in Bisbee. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me, if there's no more questions or comments from the council, let me just close off by saying thank you to the task force and Simpatico, but also a thank you to various other peoples in the community. Ian Dorfey, for example, I'm not sure if he still does it, but he used to serve food and coffee in Grassy Park. As a matter of fact, he served me a couple of times. It was very good stuff. I remember that. John Acosta, who participated in the Mariachi Festival to benefit the homeless shelter. That was Saturday in City Park. Extremely well attended. I was there as well. And very well done. Dan Maldonado, who feeds people, I don't know, three or four times a week. Serena would know that, I'm sure.
Three
times a week. Also to the public, who lends a helping hand, if it's just a smile or hand them a couple of dollars now and then. And so I think that heartfelt sentiment is in this community, but it comes from many, many different sources as well. And so I'm proud to live in my community that don't run the homeless out or try to discourage them. That's the type of town, that's the type of place I want to live in. And the character of a nation is defined how that nation takes care of its elderly, how it takes care of its children, how it takes care of the sick people, but also how it takes care of the poor and homeless. That defines the character of a nation, and I hope that would also help define the character of this city of Bisbee. Do we have a motion?
I move that we adjourn.
Second. We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. This meeting is adjourned.